If you're like me, you've probably never heard of a small creature called a red tree vole. That's V-O-L-E. And the likelihood is you've never seen one. I know I haven't. They spend their entire lives at the top of trees in Oregon. My next guest is concerned about their survival. We'll ask him why. Ryan Shannon is a senior attorney at the Center for Biological Diversity, which is suing the Trump administration in an effort to protect the red tree voles of Oregon. Welcome, Ryan.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me.
So tell me about these red tree voles.
Yeah, red tree voles are an incredibly cute little mammal. They're an arboreal mammal, which means they spend their entire lives in the trees and they rarely visit the ground. And they're one of the few mammals that are adapted to feed on conifer needles. Usually those are unpalatable, but using their teeth and learned foraging behaviors, they can strip the unpalatable resin ducts from the needle and eat the remainder. And they're uniquely adapted to feed on the needles where they live, whether that's in Sitka spruce trees or Doug fir trees. And they really depend on the complex branch and bole structures found in mature and old growth forests in the Oregon Coast Range. They use the interconnected branches to move from tree to tree, and that's where they build their nests and raise their young. But they've lost most of that range as we've lost our old growth forest due to primarily timber logging and wildfire. And the younger forests on private lands especially don't have those complex interconnected structures that they need to survive. And because they're managed for ongoing timber harvest, they likely never will.
Well, let me learn a little bit more about these voles. Are they impacted by the seasons? How many kids do the parents have usually? How do they travel or stay together? Or are they independent? Give me more information about these creatures. I've genuinely never heard of them and am very, very curious.
Yeah, so red tree voles can have multiple litters a year with multiple young in them. And like I said, they travel tree to tree within those complex interlocking old growth and mature forests. You know, if you've ever walked through the forest in the Oregon Coast Range, you can really feel the difference between younger forests and old forests. And when you get into those old forests, you know, the trees have grown together in this thick interlacing web over your head, and that's the area that they survive. They will eventually disperse from the nest that they're born in, but they don't disperse very far. The average dispersal distance is only about 56 meters, so they slowly kind of grow out from their the nest they were born in and will colonize an area of old growth in the surrounding area. So they really depend on having good, connected, large areas of habitat. And it's not easy for them to, you know, venture out and find new habitat if the habitat they do have is lost or fragmented and isolated from other areas of habitat.
So when you say a colony, how many are usually together, and what do they look like?
Yeah, so red tree voles are a small vole species. They're not very large at all, about 9 inches long. And as their name implies, they have this reddish brown fur. And I don't think a colony is necessarily the right word. You know, they don't live together besides when they're very young. I mean, they'll come together to find a mate, but otherwise they build their own little nest structures. They build these, you know, collection of twigs and branches and detritus within these complex structures. So if you're looking up into an old growth tree, you'll often see that, you know, there was a branch that fell off or an old tree that snapped in half, and they're building their nests within those cavities or within the very, very large branches that you'll find in old growth forests.
How do you know they're in trouble? How do you count their population?
That can be a tricky question. There are folks that go out and survey for them, and to do that, they actually have to go up and climb trees and look for nests and the evidence of occupation. So they might be lucky and see a vole, but they might also see fresh needles that have been stripped of their resin ducts. They might see their droppings, et cetera. But those are pretty intensive efforts to go out and actually view them. You can walk along the forest and look up in the trees and try to spot a nest and have a good idea that there might be a red tree vole up there and then go climb. But obviously that takes a lot of work.
Well, if we're talking about climbing...
What they have done...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, no, so when they climb up, they're using ropes. They'll toss a rope up and then shimmy their way up the rope into the actual tree canopy. And some of the folks that are helping us with the suit, that we represent in the suit, are active volunteers that go out and they'll survey before timber sales and the like to see if there are red tree voles present.
So that's what I was really curious about. You're talking about people climbing up old growth trees. How far off the ground floor are they?
These trees can be pretty massive. I've never asked one of our declarants how far up exactly he's gotten, but I imagine, you know, it's upwards of 100 feet off the deck. At a certain point, you have to be able to throw your rope over the tree branch that you're going to climb up to. So I think he's probably limited in a certain respect there, but these trees can be massive.
My guest is Ryan Shannon, a senior attorney with the Center for Biological Diversity. So, Ryan, these little tiny red hairy creatures are a tasty meal for spotted owls, aren't they?
They are one of the primary prey species for spotted owls, and both of them have been heavily impacted by the loss of their old growth forests. And the northern spotted owl, unfortunately, is really facing several threats all at the same time that are pushing it to the edge of extinction, with even the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service recognizing that they needed to be uplisted from threatened to endangered a few years ago. And as they continue to lose their prey, they are also facing competition from invasive barred owls and are still suffering from the effects of the historic loss of their old growth forest, just like the red tree vole.
So you're telling me that this entire ecosystem is under a lot of threat. Why do you care about the voles?
The Center for Biological Diversity cares about the existence and the protection of all species. We really pride ourselves on not just focusing on the big, charismatic megafauna, but really looking out for all species that are threatened with extinction, whether it be a red tree vole in Oregon, the bone cave harvestmen in the caves near Austin, Texas, or other endemics in the southeast that are facing impacts from the loss of longleaf pine ecosystems or freshwater habitats.
Okay, so tell me about the lawsuit.
Yeah, so in 2024, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service determined that the red tree vole did not warrant the protections of the Endangered Species Act. And the Endangered Species Act protects species that are either endangered or threatened. And threatened means that they're likely to become endangered in the foreseeable future. That finding, after a long and tortured path, was because of a listing petition that we submitted to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in 2007, asking them to protect this species. They initially responded to that petition in 2011 and found that it did warrant listing as an endangered or threatened species because of the loss of its old growth habitat, leaving its remaining populations isolated and fragmented from one another, and at risk to catastrophic events like severe wildfire. And they repeated that finding many times, six times altogether between 2011 and 2019, but they avoided listing it because they said, we think that this needs protections, but we have other species that we're working on. We think they're higher priorities. We're going to delay doing this. And then initially in 2000, or they reversed course in 2019 and made their first not warranted determination, denying our petition. We challenged that finding back then. The Fish and Wildlife Service agreed to settle that suit, finding it was prudent to revisit their finding, but they didn't change their minds. And in 2024, they issued the not warranted finding that's at issue in this suit. So we're filing suit because we think that they've made several significant errors in their finding. They didn't follow the best available science, including peer-reviewed studies. They are analyzing its resiliency based on assumptions that have no basis in science or fact. And they failed to consider whether it's going to be eliminated in a significant portion of its range, both on private lands, which make up 69% of its range, and in the Sitka spruce zone, where they uniquely adapted to forage on Sitka spruce needles along the Oregon coast, which we might lose by the end of the century due to climate change.
Okay, so forgive my language here if I'm going to use a bit of layman understanding, but what I just heard you say is that the government initially agreed with you that these red tree voles deserved some sort of protections, and so but they put them at the back of the priority line. And then years later, in 2019, they kicked you out of the line. And then in 2024, they said, you don't deserve these protections. Am I understanding that correctly?
That's right.
And so your counter is that they used bad judgment based on bad data, based on bad science.
That's right. So the Endangered Species Act is very clear that when the Fish and Wildlife Service is making decisions about whether or not a species warrants the protections of the Endangered Species Act, that those decisions are to be based solely on the best available science. Things like economic considerations can't play any part. And in this case, the primary basis of their finding is this assertion that the red tree vole actually has either high or moderately resilient populations over 73% of its range. But this ignores available science, like a study that was conducted in 2023, which shows that it actually is only, it only has habitat capabilities in 26% of its range, and then its populations are highly isolated and fragmented from one another, leaving the tree vole susceptible to severe random events like wildfires or wind blowdowns, and that it really is threatened with extinction in the foreseeable future.
Okay, well, we only have about 30 seconds left, but what happens if the court rules in your favor?
So if the court rules in our favor, they're going to have to go back and revisit this determination and actually make a finding that's in line with the best available science, both this study, the things that we know about their connectivity between populations, and actually look at how it's doing in threatened areas like the Sitka spruce zone on the Oregon coast.
Okay, and that's U.S. Fish and Wildlife that would have to do that?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have, and we wish you all the luck. Thank you, Ryan.
Thanks, Mike. Take care.